This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. This is Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, and joining me in my virtual studio tonight is my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm doing well. We're in the middle of a blizzard here in Maine. How are you doing?
Well, I probably should get the sunscreen out because it was a little sunny today. It was about 70, 75.
Yeah.
it was really, really just brutal watching the news and seeing what you guys are in for.
I got to play in the snow. It's okay.
All right. Well, we know you're all about play. Real quickly, everybody, tonight is February the, what is it, the 5th in the year 2014 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. In the year 2014, I don't know if I said that or not. But anyway, our topic tonight is ADHD and motivation, point, counterpoint. And we've done a couple of these shows, Kirsten, where you kind of come on and we just kind of, between the two of us, we just talk about things a little bit. And I really kind of enjoyed them, and I'm pretty excited about tonight's show. Actually, I'm very motivated to do tonight's show. How about that?
Oh, you snuck it in on me. That was very good, Jeff.
Usually you're leaving me a little flat-footed, but maybe I got you on that one.
Who did?
Everybody,
who did?
Kirsten, she's a clinical psychologist by background, but also she's found the light and kind of come over to ADHD coaching. If you've listened to our shows in the past, she's bright, she's energetic. She's one of the co-founders of PlayDHD, which is a great website. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but I will plug it real quick. That's PlayDHD.com. As she launched that, I remember my learning, and that is, I think everybody discounts play because I think it's a child's thing, but I am coming to realize more and more, particularly in interviews with other researchers and scientists and doctors, that play plays a huge role in our life. So I encourage you to go check her works out there because it's really good. Let's see, announcements real quick. We don't actually have a lot. I'd like to thank everybody. That came up and said hi at the 2014 Transitions Conference in Boca Raton. It was a real thrill. It was also great to see so many people from Tampa make the trek across Florida to go see that. So we had a great experience. And if you made that, I know everybody knows I'm a pretty big fan of Dr. Barclay. And I have to tell you, I've seen his presentation on executive function now, I think, for 4 years. And I think he's almost nailed it. Every time I see it, he refines it a little bit more. And I have to tell you, I really feel like what he's talking about in the coaching world to come together. I used to say it used to fit together like a glove. Now I've scrapped that. It's like skin. It's so close. I know his presentation will be put up on iTunes U here in about the end of the month or something like that. If you're interested, go check that out. But other than that, we don't have really a whole lot of announcements other than, just a few conferences. The ADHD Coaches Organization Conference is coming up in May in Phoenix, Arizona for our coaches out there. The Attention Deficit Disorder Conference is in Orlando in July, and the CHAD Conference is coming up in November, and I don't know, the venue escapes me. I think it's maybe Atlanta. No, it's actually Chicago. I take that back. So to find out more on that, go to ADHDcoaches.org, ADD.org, or CHAD.org. And so with that, Kirsten, let's get into the meat of today. So I got to ask you, what is motivation?
Motivation is wanting to do something. You tell me if you think there's more to it than that. If somebody says, "Are you motivated?"
You know,
to me that means do it.
It is?
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's lots of things that I'd like, but I don't necessarily do what I need to do to get there. So to me, motivation is what I'm inspired to do and actually act on, because in the absence of acting on it, I'm not so sure it's actually motivation.
So it's what you're willing to do to meet a goal.
Oh, I'm saying it's what you actually do to meet a goal.
It's what you actually, so that's motivation.
So
that's
so
result of motivation?
If I want to go run tomorrow, that's, you know, I want to do it. I don't know if I'm motivated to do it. If I actually get up and go and run tomorrow, then I think that's evidence that I was motivated to do it.
So motivation is the urge to engage in an action to meet a goal.
Well, this is a great conversation already. I like this. I have Ari on for this. Because here's the thing is, I think so often we think, I'm motivated to do that. I coached a guy one time, and he was like, he was a sales guy, and the company owed him like, I don't know, $10,000, $15,000 in money for expense account. And he said, I'm motivated to do this. And I go, well, it's funny. It doesn't look like it because you haven't done it for 6 months. Which is why it's so high. If you were motivated and it was easy, you would have done it by now. But because you haven't, that tells me that you want to do it, but it doesn't look like you're motivated.
Right. So the desire for something or to do something is very different than the motivation to do it.
I think so, because, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of things that I want to do.
I think what you're saying is motivation is the thing that puts you into action.
I think that action verifies that you're actually motivated to do it. Like,
right.
I want to do this, right? But if I don't do it, I'm not motivated to do it. And if I need to caveat that. I want to do that. If I don't do it, maybe there was something that was a prior. In other words, I wanted to do it, but there was something more important. So I didn't do it because there was a, you know, something that I was even more motivated to do. So I don't discount that. But if I'm motivated to do it and I actually get into action, then that kind of proves that I was actually motivated to do it. But if I want to do it and I just don't do it, I'm not so sure I was motivated.
Not enough anyway.
Remember that show that we did, God, it was almost 2 years ago with Dr. Now, David Now, on what dopamine feels like. I remember in that show, it was really kind of cool because he's, you know, we were talking about what does dopamine feel like, which is the reward neurotransmitter, and we were talking about, you know, what does it feel like? And that notion is that we all have our own motivational blueprint or dopamine blueprint, and I think that, you know, if we get that endorphin hit from it, then it's like Pavlov's dogs. We go hit that lever a couple times, which, by the way, next week we're interviewing a Dr. Bloom on dopamine, which is going to be, I've just been really excited.
I thought you were going to say that you're going to have one of Pavlov's dogs on your show.
Hey, Kirsten, I would if they could talk.
So we were talking earlier about this, the difference between motivation and just saying you're interested or motivated in something. And one of the analogies I was using is, you know, so many times as a young and uninformed psychologist, you know, working with parents, we're talking about how do you motivate Johnny to, I don't know, clean his room, do his homework, you know, pick up, help with dinner, whatever it is. And so we would tell parents to, you know, come up with a sticker chart, use incentives, give them rewards. And the parents would come back, and after a few days, you know, oh, Johnny's doing great the first week. But usually by week two or three, Johnny didn't really care anymore. And Johnny really wasn't doing any of the things like, you know, cleaning his room and helping with dinner and all those kinds of things. And Johnny wasn't really all that interested in the rewards. It wasn't worth it to him. Johnny would say, I don't, you know, $10 is great, but I don't really care. I don't want to clean my room.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, motivation is very different than rewards sometimes.
Well, I go ahead, finish your thought.
Go ahead. The next thing I was going to say is I was actually listening to a TED Talk because I'm addicted to those. I'm very motivated by those. And somebody was talking about a study by Sam Glucksberg where they ran some studies and they said to people that they wanted them to solve a problem. And to one group, they told them they were just doing it for time testing. They wanted to see what the average was of all people across time, and that was it. And the next group, they told, if they got in the top 25% as far as, you know, fastest time, that they would get $5. And if they got in the top, like, 5%, they would get $25. For solving this problem. And the problem involved some creativity. It wasn't like a real easy problem. And what they found is actually the people who were just being timed just for the sake of getting a time actually performed better by 3.5 minutes compared to the people who were offered a monetary incentive for working faster.
Well, see, I like what you said. At the end of the day, I'm not – okay, if you want Johnny to do X, right? He's not
right.
motivated to do that. You're using an external motivation – and,
yep.
and adjusting that environment to get him to do what you want him to do. I mean, at the end of the day, Johnny's still not motivated to do what he did because if he was motivated, he wouldn't necessarily need that external stimulation, which kind of goes into, you know, this is Attention Talk Radio. We pay attention to attention. And when people talk about motivation so often, I think they're talking about what they want somebody to do, not necessarily what that person's motivated to do. And we use external stimulation as a carrot to guide people in the direction to do what we want them to do. And if they do it, we say, well, he was motivated to do it. I'm like, I don't think he was motivated. I think he was just motivated by the external carrot.
As long as you've got the right carrot. Sometimes we're using the carrot that we think is going to work, and it doesn't match the blueprint for the person what's going to motivate them.
Brilliant. And so we're saying, hey, this person should be motivated by this, and if it's not, I think he would be motivated by getting M&Ms. Hypothetically. Well,
right.
Johnny doesn't like M&Ms, then you're using the wrong external stimulation. Just because you like M&Ms doesn't mean that's enough juice to get him through cleaning up his room.
Exactly. It's also why, though, you know, especially with kids and sometimes for adults with ADHD, money is not a real salient reward because money isn't something you can do anything with immediately. It's symbolic. It's not the game that Johnny wants. You know, he doesn't want cash. He wants the game. So if you say to him, I'll give you $25 and then you can go get a game, $25 is $25. But, you know, the game would have been way more salient. That would have been motivating to him. If you have the game right in your hand and say, this is yours as soon as you get it done. But cash in your hand isn't really going to do it for him.
So just to kind of summarize where I think we are, is there's that thing that you're just – it's like you got your dopamine blueprint, and when you find something that gives you that shot of dopamine, and you would do it in the absence of external stimulation, and you do it all the time, to me that's just raw motivation. And you can use external stimulation as a reward to get you through something that you're not ordinarily motivated to do, but you'd like to get to the outcome. That can be an effective strategy to get you to the outcome that you want, but to me that's not motivation. It's I'm using these other things to lead me through this process because I'm really not motivated to do it. I got to have this other stuff to get me there. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
And so everybody's going to sit there and say, you know, blah, 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 you know, Jeff, what the hell? I talk all so much about when it comes to ADHD, it's about environment. And I've given some talks, and actually I'm giving a presentation next week to a local TAMP group on the impact of ADHD on sports and exercise. And last weekend at the transition conference, I was talking about Dr. Barclay's ADHD, if it's a self-regulation, I mean, it's an executive function defined by self-regulation. In order for that to be an executive function, you're directing an action to yourself to change your behavior, to change the future. And those with ADHD struggle with that and staying persistent over things over time. So when you look at exercise like running, jogging, things that are boring, it's difficult for them to persist to it. But I'm all big on adjusting the environment. All too often I coach those with ADHD is focus on the people, the social side of it, not the actual exercise itself, because I think that you're motivated for the being with somebody else, and if you focus on having that around, that's the external stimulation that'll get you through the exercise to get you to the outcome that you're waiting for. And is this making sense to you, Clara, the way I'm describing this?
Sometimes you have to focus on something else
and
that you are motivated by.
I want this outcome. I'm not motivated naturally to get to that outcome, so I'm going to change my environment so that I got stimulation to get me through what I would normally need to do to achieve the outcome I want.
You're going to trick yourself.
prefer the word trick, but to a certain extent, I can't necessarily deny it. I mean, because if you're consciously, if it's a, based off of Dr. Barclay's thing, if it's a self-directed act, I'm going to say, I'm going to willfully put these people here so it'll change my behavior to do this because I want the feeling of being good on the exercise. If you're consciously doing that, I don't know if you're tricking yourself, you're actually, it's an executive function, executive planning function for you to achieve what you want to that you're not normally motivated to do.
Right. I mean, one of the more successful fitness programs is CrossFit training, and it's ridiculously expensive to join the clubs, but they pride themselves on creating communities. And so when you go in, you know each other. Everybody supports one another. They have coaches that work, you know, with the class and come up and coach you through each class. And everybody's working on the same thing together, and it's not really that competitive. It's more supportive. So they're taking the focus off of the exercise, and the exercise, the science of their exercise is incredible, but they really emphasize the community aspect of it, the social aspect of it. And so that kind of changes one. And when you think about going to CrossFit, it's not just, I'm going to go get healthy, which you do, but it's, I'm going to go see my friend, or I'm going to go see one of the coaches, or I'm going to go do this event with them. So you kind of trick yourself into going because you focus on this other part, the social part, that you really enjoy.
I don't like the word trick, but if if you want to exercise, focus on the external stimulation, the social side. If you just say, hey, listen, I'm going to go get an exercise bicycle and sit in my basement because I'm motivated to get in shape, I think most people fall flat on their face because they don't realize that you're not naturally motivated to go exercise, but you are naturally motivated to do something else. So focus on those external stuff to get you to where you want. So I need to run to a break real quick. Everybody out there, Kirsten, again, go check out playdhd.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Breaking news. Chad introduces the new digital edition of Attention Magazine, starting with the August issue and continuing with each bi-monthly issue. The digital edition is available for easy reading on www.chad.org. Through collaborative leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support, CHAD and Attention Magazine work to provide science-based information about ADHD to parents, educators, and professionals who treat the disorder, the media, and the general public. When you advertise in Attention Magazine, your advertisement that includes a website address will automatically have a link to your website. There is no additional fee for your digital edition advertisement. It's free.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Kirsten Milliken, and we're having a great conversation about motivation. One of the great things about technology is, again, this is our virtual studio. Kirsten's up in Maine, and I'm in Florida. So during break, she texted me a great thing, intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Talk to me about that.
Yes, I did. Well, so, I mean, this is some of what we're talking about already, which is the extrinsic or external motivators. So, you know, Johnny's game, cash, you know, things that are outside of ourselves. Getting a paycheck for adults is extrinsic motivation. And a lot of what they're finding is that, you know, extrinsic motivators are great if we're just on an assembly line. We're doing some pretty simple tasks that don't require a whole lot of creativity or problem solving. You know, Johnny, I just need you to put widgets together all day long. Hey, pay me a good wage and I'll do that all day long. That's motivating enough. But what they're finding is that intrinsic motivators are actually more salient in every situation, but especially when it comes to more complex and creative types of tasks, that it's really important for the motivation to involve. And there are three things that I'm hearing for intrinsic motivation, which is a sense of autonomy, mastery, and a sense of purpose. That those three intrinsic motivators will get us to do quite a lot of things, and sometimes very quickly and very well, especially if it involves higher level thinking, problem solving, and creativity. So when you think about, you know, Google or some of the other, you know, IDEO, all of these companies that are trying to get their employees to be creative and come up with the next big thing, money is not usually the incentive that they use. You know, they give them time to go play, ironically, to give them a sense of autonomy, that they have a choice, that they can create what they want in this 20% of their time. They give them opportunities to learn, to have mastery, to get better at the things that they're interested in. And they also give them opportunities to participate in community activities that give them a sense of purpose, that they're contributing to something bigger than themselves, and also to their company culture. So these companies are pretty smart about how to motivate their employees. And again, it's not with cash most of the time these days, unless you're working on a line, assembly line.
It's interesting that you bring this up, because I'm listening to you, and I'm not nearly as educated as you are on these types of things. And I'm listening, and I'm hearing intrinsic, and there's so often where I'm coaching people, and they're naturally motivated by being the object of somebody else's attention, or they love the endless quest for the next aha.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're describing what you're saying, I'm making a connection. It's different language. And everybody, to me, I got my own teenagers, for any frequent flyers on the show that listen to it. And I struggle with sometimes, and it's, you know, I talk to parents sometimes, and the kids are, like, sitting there texting, and they're like, you know, they're not motivated to do anything. And so often I like and say, well, my son is very motivated to text his girlfriend because he's the object of her attention when he's doing that stuff, and it makes him kind of feel good. He's really motivated to do that, even in the absence of doing some other things. And I've actually coached different people that their issue when it comes to ADD in the context of self-regulation is not engaging in trying to figure out the ahas or insights or different angle. Their problem is stopping. I mean, having insatiable appetite to see something a little differently, like, hey, listen, I just invented the wheel, or I just figured out how to light fire, like this revolutionary thing to mankind. And that relates back to what you're saying intrinsically, which to me goes back to your own dopamine blueprint and what naturally motivates you, which to me really kind of drives the bus. And when we look at people and say, he should be motivated to do that, and they're not doing that, that goes back to, well, for whatever reason, that's not actually doing it. If that person wants to get to the outcome and they're not intrinsically motivated, they need to find the extrinsic motivators or try to find a way to bring those intrinsic environments there by manipulating the environment to lead them to that outcome.
Exactly. So, another. You know, I love telling stories. So the other day, I was trying to find a new virtual assistant, and you know, I was going online, and I said, you know, I need somebody to help me, remind me of when I have due dates coming up and when, you know, there are deadlines coming up and projects that I have on these timelines because that are, you know, months out that I forget I've put there. And somebody said, well, why don't you just get a reminder app? And I said, you know, this is what I tell my clients. Your calendar and that reminder app don't really care if you keep that appointment. They don't really care if you meet the deadline. No bell on my phone makes me feel that there's some urgency to get something done. I'm motivated to get those things done, but not by these little bells and whistles. What I'm motivated by is knowing that another human being is going to be calling me and saying to me, Kirsten, you have a deadline that you have to meet, and it's due tomorrow. That motivates me. So it's not always the task that's going to be motivating. Sometimes it's how you set yourself up to do the task that makes you feel motivated.
That goes back to the epicenter, I think, is that we use motivation loosely, that you say you're motivated to do it, but it doesn't actually work with the reminders. It seems to me you can accomplish, you're more motivated to do it in the company of other people in interaction. That's where your true source of motivation is. And if you bring that external stimulation, it's an intrinsic stimulation that you bring into the party as an extrinsic type thing is what gets you there. You're not actually motivated to do it, because my theory is if you were naturally motivated, you'd almost do it without any of that stuff.
Right. Well, and maybe what we need to differentiate is interest. I have an interest in doing certain things. I have an interest in making lots of money. I have an interest in, you know, having a clean house, all of those good things. But I don't always necessarily feel motivated to act to get those things done unless I set things up right.
Well, for me, there's, you know, I'd love to be a millionaire. I would love to have a spotless house. I mean, there's a gazillion things that I actually would like. I mean, I'd love to have the outcome. But there's so much in this world that I'm just not motivated to get to. The energy and effort that I have to expend to get to that, the outcome is not enough of a reward for me so that I would actually do it. Where,
right.
So that which I want to talk about the same side of this on the opposite coin, when people are doing things that don't seem to be good for themselves, but they continue to do it from a motivational type thing. But that's the topic tonight is motivation. Really, what is it? And to me, it's things you're actually motivated to do. You do it all the time. I'm motivated to talk. That's why I'm not motivated to write. I actually hate it. I love coaching because I just get to talk. I mean, you call me up and want me to write you an email, I could shoot myself, but it's easy. I'm motivated. The greatest things for me is when I'm working with somebody and they get an insight, the aha, and particularly when they get it and I get it. When I'm doing interviews on the show and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm having an aha right now. I love that myself, and I love it when other people do that. It doesn't take a lot of anything for me if I can be putting that when that's kind of at hand, whereas anything else, I got to bring that stuff around. So to me, motivation is this blueprint type thing that's really, 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 really natural. And if you know, understand more in your language, that intrinsic motivation and those characteristics, you can begin to use those intrinsic characteristics as more effective external motivators. I'm not saying that very well. But you begin to bring that to the party to lead you along. I want to get to this outcome, but I'm not naturally motivated to do it. But if I use the intrinsic things in this environment, that will get me there. In other words, I want to exercise. I'm not paying attention to the actual exercise, but the culture and the help and the socialization, that will get me to my goal.
Exactly. Another thing that works really well for me is waiting till the last minute. Does that work well for you?
Oh, I hate that. I do it, but I hate it.
Well, see, here's the thing. I don't fight it anymore. We talked about this procrastination, too.
Yep.
Sometimes a sense of urgency is really motivating.
That goes back to me as it's an endorphin rush, and
well,
artificially,
which is maybe part of the difference between interest and motivation is that it's a feeling. Being motivated is a feeling. Would you agree with that?
Well, I'm gonna be anxious to talk next week to Dr. Bloom, because to me is, if you get rid of all the emotion and you get rid of these words like language, interest, and motivation, all that kind of stuff, it really kind of comes down to is if you're getting that dopamine hit and you push the lever and do that, so you might have to wait to the last second till the adrenaline's kind of going, and that's when your brain goes, I'm going to release this stuff, and you get your hit. Are you motivated to do it, or no, I have to wait that long before I get my hit? It's almost like a crack addict.
Well, you do know that reward center is what activated when people use drugs, and it is underactivated in people who have ADHD. So you're onto something there, Jeff.
Well, see, I think it. My conversation next week, because I'm excited, is because I remove all the emotion, all the words at the end of the day, and this is way oversimplified. Is at the end of the day, it's what's your natural blueprint, and what is it that gives you that dopamine hit that drives all your behavior? If I'm way oversimplified it, then it's really not about interest, and it's really not about all these words we assigned it to. It's just whatever floats your brain's dopamine hit to make your brain feel good, so it'll keep pushing that button to keep getting that, is really what drives your behavior. And if you understand, if you watch your behavior and observe it, be your own scientist, if you will, then it'll relieve it. It will reveal its clues to you. And when you understand that, this whole metacognition, I actually call it observational attending, is that if you know that and you watch how your brain works, then you can willfully say, I want my brain to accomplish this, so I'm going to rearrange my environment, because if I do that, I put my brain in that environment, it's naturally going to react in a way that's going to lead me to where I think I want to go, which is...
Well, essentially what you're going back to Pavlov now and saying, you know, we're not dogs, but in some ways we have to figure out what makes us salivate.
That is, and with that, hold that thought. We're going to come back. We're going to run a commercial break because I got a whole thing on that. So with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention@attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
All right, Kirsten, here we go. So, last Friday, I saw Dr. Barclay revise his conversation. And when he talks about his executive function stuff, anyway, there's a lot there, but he gets to his level one stuff, and he says, self-regulation is a self-directed act to yourself to change your behavior, to change the future. And he says there's six basic things that we do, and oversimplifying is we see ourselves, we talk to ourselves, we feel to ourselves, and we play to ourselves. And if you're not aware of it, and you're not conscious of it, you can't inhibit anything. You automatically do it. And so much of coaching is about the pause. Would you agree?
Absolutely, I agree.
It's about the pause and noticing what you're doing. And the moment that you pause and you witness yourself, you're now in choice. You can say, I'm going to continue with that, or I'm going to change my behavior. And this issue of, is if I naturally begin to notice how my brain works and what I'm in, I like your word now, I'm really gravitated, intrinsically motivated to do, I can then begin to observe my own brain, and I can outthink myself, outthink myself and say, okay, I want this outcome, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to manipulate my environment and put my brain in it because I know it's how it's going to react, and it's going to react in such a way to achieve what I want it to achieve. That is so metacognition, which is... What was really kind of cool is Barclay's actually using that language now, which if you want to think about what you're thinking, that's the whole area of coaching. That's why I say we're attention coaches. We're not ADHD coaches. We're trying to help you observe your attention and begin to manage it. So rip me apart. Go ahead. What do you think?
What am I going to rip you apart about? You didn't even use the word salivate. That's what I was waiting for.
This is point counterpoint. You're supposed to like say, "You, Jeff, you ignorant jerk."
You fool. You've been blinded by Dr. Barclay once again.
Well, you know, I've been drinking the Kool-Aid. But it kind of goes back
to... You've been drinking it for a long time.
But if that's intrinsic to you and it's this natural type thing, we can get rid of interest and we can get rid of motivations and say this is my motivational blueprint based off of this. And if you observe it, and you're willfully managing your brain, then you're effectively getting what you want.
Yeah, it's all about management. It's all about paying attention. I have nothing to argue. Because I think you're a genius when it comes to this stuff. So
I don't know. There's two other real interesting points that I want to bring up. One of those is at last CHAD conference, Dr. Brooke was talking up, and he was talking about motivation. He said, profound thing, we'd be dead if we weren't motivated. In other words, we're always motivated. You couldn't survive it, which kind of goes back to we have these instincts and stuff like that, which I thought was really cool. But he said something that I'm still trying to work out, and so I'm interested in your thoughts. Is some people are motivated to avoid.
Yes.
And that's an interesting concept to me, because if your motivation is to avoid things, you're kind of stuck in a downward do loop. Give me everybody. I was back in the 80s. I was one of the last guys to computer program with punch cards, and we had to do like do loops and arrays. So all you old people know what I'm talking about. All you young people going, what the heck is he talking about? But it's a negative type thing. When you put the punch cards in, the computer goes on forever, and you have to unplug it and start it all over again because it keeps going in circles endlessly. But that notion of people are motivated to avoid things. What's your take on that?
Well, my take is a couple of things. First of all, people, you know, parents use punishment a lot. It's the thing that we go to easily because when we're angry, it's easy to punish a kid, to take something away, to, you know, send them to their room, to do whatever. But that doesn't really, it's not very motivating for most people. So, you know, moving away from something is not as salient as moving towards something that you're interested in. And again, it has to be something that you're interested in. I had another comment on that, but I lost myself along the way. So
you keep thinking, because people will say, I'm going to use punishment to motivate somebody to do something.
Right.
I'm not so sure. You're still using the outside. You're manipulating the outside to move them forward. And it goes back, this is what you said earlier that was really brilliant. Punishment might not be really what motivates them.
Right. Well, I mean, so the next part of that is, you know, you might motivate somebody to do something once for a very brief period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm going to slap your hand if you touch that cookie on the table. Well, I don't really want to get slapped, and so I won't grab the cookie right now. But it's not going to change my overall behavior. Later on, if that cookie is sitting out and I'm not at risk for being slapped right then, I'm going to grab that cookie. So you're not really changing a child or an adult's behavior for the long term when you're using aversion, which is what, you know, trying to get them to avoid a negative outcome is.
But they're not motivated. That goes back to their root motivation is to grab the cookie. You didn't change their motivation with it. You're just trying to manipulate the environment.
So you're trying to get them to pay attention to something else.
I like that. You know, I like that.
Right. But it's only for the moment. It gets them to pause.
Yep.
That I'm going to slap your hand gets them to pause and maybe at the moment make a different choice. But long term, you're not really changing the motivational blueprint. The motivational blueprint says, I want a cookie.
Which is interesting, because when I'm coaching parents, a lot of times people say, you know, can you coach my 15-year-old? I don't coach 15-year-olds. I'll coach you to them. And I, the coaching stuff in that situation is to coach them. Watch The Dog Whisperer. It's kind of funny, because whenever I watch that, it's not about training the dog. It's about training the trainer. And
exactly. So
often I'm dealing with the parents and saying, hey, listen, if you're consistent with this behavioral adjustments, it has to be consistent, it has to be all the time, because it's only as good as long as there's consistency to it. When you start to let it go, the dog starts to, you know, oh, wait, I can get away with this now. It starts to kind of move away. So the coaching for me is not coaching the kid, but coaching the consistency of the parents, which, again,
it's not natural to me. To me, that just kind of gets hard. But we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to shift this thing. You know, Kirsten, one of the things that, amazes me is everybody says, well, that person's not motivated because they're doing something that maybe you don't think they should do or you don't want them to do. And that drives me nuts because the person's doing whatever they're doing because they're motivated. Just because they're not doing what you want them to do or what you think they should do or what everybody else does doesn't, to me, indicate that they're not motivated.
You have a good example of that, don't you? There was a was a kid that you were telling me about.
Well, there was a keynote. It was Rick LaVarge is not the right name, but he was at the 09 CHAD conference, and he was like telling the story of this kid. It was like in fifth grade or whatever. He had dyslexic and ADD, and every Wednesday there was the kids had to get up and read in front of class, and the rotation was every 3 weeks, and he was up. And one Wednesday or whatever it was, he was in gym class, and he broke his glasses. And so when it came time for him to read, he couldn't do it because he didn't have his glasses. And then, oddly enough, every third week for a period of time, he kept breaking his glasses. And after a period of time, his dad was getting ticked because he was having to buy glasses and stuff all the time. And the keynote told the story, well, you know, the father drove his, you know, this kid's not motivated, da-da-da. And the guy goes, what do you mean the kid's not motivated? And there was some insinuation that there was some abuse going on. I don't know to the level. And it doesn't really matter. Other than the kid was not having a pleasant time coming home facing his dad saying, I got to get another pair of glasses. And the guy said, what do you mean this kid's not motivated? He's really motivated. And the moral of the story was he was motivated to break his glasses because he didn't want to stand in front of his peers and stutter and have a hard time reading. And I really loved that because it really rung a bell in me is that so often people are doing what they're doing because they're motivated. Just because it's not what you want doesn't mean they're motivated. And as a coach, if they're doing it, I back up and I go, I'm curious as to why this person's doing it. Because if I'm open and curious and wonder, I can actually maybe actually understand what that person's true motivation is and then meet them where they are. And deal, just by saying that kid's not motivated is it's stupid on my part because it makes no sense. It's just they're not doing what I want them to do, so they're not motivated. BS.
Well, and the other thing is, too, is that usually people are motivated, and it's always to something positive. They're always looking to gain something. We're never looking, usually, to, you know, lose something, get rid of something. It's what we're going to gain. So, I mean, a lot of times we're looking at our kids and thinking that they're making these foolish choices, breaking your glasses. Why would you break your glasses? Your dad's going to smack the crap out of you, and you're not going to be able to see. Well, if you look at it at the surface level, then that's what you're going to see, and it's hard to understand why that would motivate somebody. But if you ask the next question, as you said, be curious. What else is that kid gaining from it? You know, oh, well, now he doesn't have to read in front of his peers, and that is really uncomfortable for him, and that is a salient motivator.
Absolutely brilliant, Kirsten. Is they got something to gain. It might not be what you see, but that's what they're doing. That's driving it, and you can't see it unless you're looking for it, if you're paying attention to
or asking the question, because so many times we make assumptions rather than just asking, especially when it comes to our kids.
I'm just being quiet for a second, everybody. I love what you said. If they're doing it, the coaching question I ask, how is it serving you to do that? Because they're gaining something from it. I just can't help but say, you know, that it's that kid who, with ADD or anywhere else, who's struggling and frustrated. They always run around with that, you know, that out crowd that the parents always get nervous with. And what do they have to gain? Well, they're accepted.
Exactly.
They're brought in. That's what they have to gain from it. And if you're going to just argue, well, they should just kind of know better all day long, maybe that they need to be accepted somewhere else in a more positive environment, and that might kind of move them. Because now you're working with I'm buying into an intrinsic thing, their intrinsic motivation, and you're meeting them where they are as opposed to, I like this, I'm having a little aha. You can deal with their natural intrinsic motivation and work with it, you can get there, but you can't always overcome intrinsic motivation with extrinsic motivation.
That's true. I mean, we can take it, I'm going to push the envelope a little bit here, but, you know, I've worked with a lot of teenagers, and now I work with a lot of adults, and many of who have ADHD, and many of those who have substance abuse issues. And, you know, when I used to run community groups with teenagers who were involved in the correction system, we had a lot of kids who were using drugs. And we were always talking about what were the rewards and consequences for their behaviors. And we would ask the kids, you know, what's the reward for using drugs? Well, there's no reward. I get locked up. I go to jail. Some of them would say, oh, I get to have fun with my friends. But figuring out really what was at the core of why they were using drugs, oftentimes by themselves, and it really had to do with, especially with kids who had learning problems, wanting to feel good for a moment, wanting to get out of their head, wanting to feel like there wasn't all this confusion going on. And usually if we looked at what substances they were using and what it was doing for them, that would tell us. And a lot of the kids got so that they could recognize, yeah, I do want to feel good. I use it when I feel bad. I use it when I feel bored and my mind is racing. I use it when I feel uncomfortable. I use it when I feel anxious or depressed or irritable or whatever, because I want to feel better. And that was really motivating for them. Not a great choice, but very motivating for them because that's how uncomfortable they were. But it took, asking a few more questions to figure out, why would somebody do something so self-destructive, seemingly so self-destructive, over and over again? And it, because we all want to feel good. Nobody wants to feel like crap.
Oh, my God. I'm having... Ding, 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 ding. So where I am is extrinsic motivation cannot overcome intrinsic motivation. And as I'm running the litmus test on that in my mind and the simulations, I'm going, holy wow, that's because if you really want to coach somebody, you need to help them work with them on what they're intrinsically motivated by. Not extra. All that stuff out there that we read and print, because we've done shows on procrastination and babbling, and that's all that extrinsic, like blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really get to the core. And we can motivate people with M&Ms and money and stuff. That's all kind of extrinsic, and it's short-lived. You really can't fight intrinsic motivation with extrinsic for a longer period of time. So as a coach, if we can focus and be curious about that intrinsic stuff and help a person become conscious of it and begin to figure out how we can use intrinsic motivation to move forward, it's far more powerful. That makes sense?
It makes sense, and I'm going to agree with you. Is that okay?
Holy, well, it is okay. You win! I'm a fan. All right, so this is worth it. Everybody, this is serious. This is really going to help me because it really makes a lot of sense. And I like how now is that intrinsic motivation is that net it goes back. I still think it's related to this biological thing, not this emotional thing that it's not interest and it's not this. It's just this chemical thing that kind of goes on. But still, we can call it whatever we want. The fact of the matter is there's this thing that's there, and if you can focus on the intrinsic side of it and use that, you're going to be far more successful than the extrinsic side. So after all, you can put prisoners and lock them away forever. That's very, very extrinsic. They should be motivated not to go back to the street, but we talked to Rob Todisco and countless others, Kirsten, and they go right back to where they're coming from. So that solution ain't working.
No, it's not, because we're not tapping into what's really important.
I got to get off and start dictating some of this so I don't forget it. With that being said, Kirsten, is there anything
but this is the end of the show because Jeff's got to go now.
Jeff's got to go document so I can remember it all. Is there anything else that that we haven't said that we think we should comment before we close this up?
No, I think we just about covered it. So my summary that I'm taking from what you're getting is, we really have to, as coaches, as parents, and for ourselves, figure out what motivates us intrinsically. What is the thing that gets us going and puts us into action? And we need to focus on those things in our coaching, in how we help our kids to make better choices and develop better habits, and in how we get ourselves to meet the goals that we've set for ourselves. How's that?
Brilliant. And just how does this play out in the world? I coach people all the time with ADHD on getting up in the morning. They have a hard time getting up. And my issue is if you got nothing to look forward to that day, you ain't getting up. If you're like if you're excited because you're going to ride roller coasters that day, most people leap out of bed and they kind of go do that. But at the end of the day, you can use alarm clocks. You can do all kinds of extrinsic type stuff that's supposed to motivate you. But at the end of the day, if you ain't looking forward to anything that day, you're working against yourself. It's hard. If you really want to be able to get out of bed, focus on trying to put yourself in a situation where you're interested and you're motivated to get up and do what's going on that day. You said something earlier about solving problems, you know, whatever it is. That's what's going to get you out of bed, not two alarm clocks and all that stuff that you do. That's all extrinsic motivation to try to get you out of bed. What drives you is if you're excited to get up and to get out of bed because there's something cool coming, you're motivated, you're going to do it. So to me, Kirsten, this has really kind of come together. I've learned a lot tonight, and I just share that everybody. That's a perfect example of how some of this stuff kind of plays out. So with that, Kirsten, thank you so much for coming on the show. I learned a ton.
Excellent. Can I just plug that this week on PlayDHD, we have Melissa Orlov is going to be doing an interview on relationships with Valentine's Day coming up. So that's on PlayDHD.com.
And Melissa, we've interviewed Melissa before. I've actually got some Attention Talk videos are going to be released to her. She's great, so you've got to go listen. I can guarantee you it's really, really good stuff. She's got her pulse on that. So everybody check that out. It's playdhd.com. And with that, Kirsten, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Take care, everybody. Again, if you like the dopamine conversation, next week we've got a Dr. Bloom coming on. Kind of an expert in this area, and we're just going to focus in on that as the reward system. So if you like this show, catch that one. Catch you next week.